Support for Impact Cincinnati comes from Murray and Robin Sinclair.
Good morning. This is Impact Cincinnati on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Marianne Zalesnik. Cincinnati's retirement system suffered big losses with the economic downturn and for years has been facing hundreds of millions of dollars in unfunded liability. If the city has to use general fund money to subsidize it, other city services will suffer. But retirees say they deserve the money they were promised. This morning, we're going to sort through what's happened with the Cincinnati retirement system. Joining me are Cincinnati Councilman Christopher Smitherman and Cincinnati Inquirer reporter Barry Horseman, who's followed this topic for many years. Councilman Chris Seelback was originally scheduled to be here today, but he had to cancel. And Executive Director of the Retirement System, Paula Tilsley, declined to be on the program. She responded to an email request saying this. She said, "At this time, I am unable to meet your request since I have been requested to appear before council on the same topic. It would be inappropriate for me to participate in any media discussions before then. Unfortunately, the same answer applies for the board members and staff." So that is why Ms. Tilsley is not here today. We would also like to hear your questions and comments. You can email them to impact@wvxu.org, or better yet, post them on our Facebook page. Good morning, Barry and Christopher.
Good morning. Thank you for having us.
I think a great place to start. I think a lot of people are aware that the Cincinnati retirement system is having some troubles, but really are unclear as to how bad they are and how it all got started. And maybe, Barry, since you've been following this for so long, you can just give us a handle on where the system is right now.
Sure. Well, maybe a good way is to take it back even further and provide some historical perspective. When the Cincinnati retirement system was created in 1931, it actually predated Social Security. At the time, it really was one of the most enlightened and innovative programs in America, with an objective of allowing former workers to live out their life with a degree of financial security and dignity that had been absent to that point. That goal remains as noble today as it was then. The problem is that over the years, and especially in the 80s and 90s, past city councils consistently provided more generous health and basic pension benefits. Over time, the formulas reached a point where they simply were no longer sustainable. Until a few years ago, it was possible for many city workers to walk out in their mid-50s with 90% of their former salary as a beginning pension with 3% annual increases. So by year four of retirement, you actually had people making more money than they did on the payroll. Now, you don't have to be the chairman of the Federal Reserve to realize that is not sustainable in the long term. What this has done over time is build what's called an unfunded liability, which currently is at $728 million. And by city figures, that will grow to $1 billion in just 3 years. That's the deep hole we're trying to dig out of.
Christopher? And layered on top of that, the city had pretty aggressive assumptions, 8.5% returns, which weren't reality. And based around those assumptions, the city would fund the pension at a certain level, which they've been failing to do. So in times when the market was doing well, they didn't put money in. And when the markets turned sour, they did not put money in. In this last budget cycle, we underfunded the pension by $54 million. And doing that has helped the city balance the budget. But now we have this unstructured, balanced budget going forward. Everything Barry said is exceptionally true, but we have an investment team, in my opinion, who has continued to fail to perform. When the market is doing very well, they seem to be underinvested. When the market is doing very poor, they seem to be pulling money out. We have about $1.9 to $2 billion of present value assets, and we're sending out about 10% of the value of that, or $200 million a year, to current retirees. So now we're actually going through principal money. Future value, we need our present value in the plan. I estimate that we need about $3.2 billion to meet our obligation. So we're underwater significantly here. And right now, the city council, I think this is the biggest problem, and it would be synonymous with what the county is experiencing with the stadium fund. And this issue could push the city of Cincinnati, like other municipalities, into bankruptcy.
Now, you mentioned other municipalities. This is not a problem unique to Cincinnati.
It is not.
It is not, although Cincinnati is alone in having its own municipal retirement system. Most other municipalities and counties across the state have bought into the state PERS system. As I said, the city 82 years ago started its own system, and it's finding advantages and disadvantages to that. The advantages, you don't have to be governed by what's happening elsewhere. The disadvantages, you have to go it entirely alone. And right now we're paying some of the consequences of downturns in the market, especially the 2008 crash, when the system lost roughly 30% of its assets at that point. That gave us the hole that we're stuck in right now.
Mm-hmm. So there have been a number of ideas of things that can be done to fix the problem. I know there's some concern about paying for health care and how the health care works. What's the status of what retirees receive in terms of health care right now?
There was a reduction in February where they're clearly paying more in health care benefits, and it's, Mary Ann, one of the legs of the stool of the solvency of the pension. But another big part of this is the city's inability to put our obligation into the pension. And as a member of city council, that continues to concern me. So if the retirement board comes forth and says, we need to fund at $54 million this year in order to meet that $700 million loss, and we don't do that, it exacerbates the problem. It becomes compounded. This is not something we can invest our way out of. So what I want to stress is I feel like the workers did what they were supposed to do over the years, and I'm very sensitive to the retirees here, and I feel like we can't cut their benefits like they're discussing cutting COLA now without us, the city, meeting our financial obligations first. And that, to me, is a morality question that city council is going to have to wrestle with.
Christopher just brought up a figure that really highlights the challenge facing the city when he mentioned if we have to put $54 million in next year to stay current with our obligations. Last year, the city put in roughly $35 million. I don't think there's anyone at City Hall who thinks it's realistic to toss approximately another $20 million into the pension system this year. All of these are either-or decisions. Every dollar that goes in the pension system for about 7,000 or 8,000 current and former employees theoretically comes at the expense of programs for 300,000 Cincinnatians. So you have to really analyze what taking $20 million out of the city's general fund would do to general city services.
Well, and getting back to some of the changes that have been made with health care and talks about changes with the COLA, the retirees group has sued. Is that correct?
Yes,
and
they have.
Maybe, Barry, you followed that. Can you say what the status of all of that is?
There are a number of lawsuits. The first one that's played out dealt with the health issue. To oversimplify, the retirees basically said we were guaranteed a certain level of health benefits. The city's response was we have the discretion of changing that at any moment. You're getting that, frankly, through our good graces, and you're not guaranteed X amount of coverage at any point. The courts ultimately sided with the city, although it did say the retirees have a right to feel they were misled because clearly there were representations made that the retirement benefits you're walking out the door with are the ones you can anticipate having forevermore. That clearly is no longer the case, but the courts have said the city can take account of changing economic conditions to alter the health coverage. But there will also be challenges to basic pensions benefits. And if we get into, as it seems likely, most people think this year, a possible reduction in the annual cost of living adjustment, that gets closer to the core pension benefit. And there's no doubt whatsoever that that'll end up in court also.
This question comes from Harold, and he is a city employee who worked in, he listed 96 as his year, so I guess that's the year he retired. He says, can the city draw a line in the sand and leave current retirees alone and revamp the system to impact current and future employees? The current 5,700 retirees will eventually die off, and when that happens, the stress on the fund might be alleviated.
The answer is yes and no. The system is set up so that the current workers are actually funding the system, so there is a direct connection like Social Security between the current workers and the retirees. And through attrition and terminations, the city now has more retirees than we have city workers, which is also impacting the solvency of the system. I do, though, believe that we can and should morally leave the current retirees at no harm and be very aggressive about, as we hire new people, changing the game quite aggressively and even trying to put plans in together, putting plans forward of self-directed plans like 401k plans. But how we carve this out, to me as a member of city council, is very, very important. And I just don't believe that we should bother the current retirees and even those workers who maybe have worked 20 or 23 years. I mean, we have to classify where the worker is on how they're impacted, in my opinion.
Barry?
And in fact, many of the changes we've seen out of the city in the last few years have done just that. We now have various categories of employees, current retirees, people within a few years of retirement, people mid-career, treated differently. The problem with drawing the line in the sand right now and only changing it for future hires is that you don't really see the consequences of that in terms of savings for the city for another 30 years or so when those people start retiring. The real stress on the system right now are the benefits being received by current retirees, and it gets into the moral issue that Christopher raises. Given that's an economic reality, does that trump the moral obligation the city has to the in terms of the promises made to the people when they went out the door?
And does that make it hard to hire now if there are a lot of changes made? I mean, is the system going to be comparable to what most of the public sector has?
It does make it somewhat harder, even though the benefits for new hires would be rich. But Marianne, what makes it more difficult is as we try to recruit companies to come to the city of Cincinnati who understand that the result of our pension could result in higher taxes. So that type of uncertainty makes it more difficult as you're trying to recruit companies to a community that is facing an unfunded liability of $1 billion. That becomes a reality for them. So ultimately, the taxpayer who's listening to this, many times they don't understand that they're on the hook for the system that Barry and I are talking about. They believe that just because they're not a retiree or a city worker, this conversation has nothing to do with them, and it's directly related to them because by law, we are, and as taxpayers, responsible for the solvency of the pension.
And I think it's important to point out, Marianne, that even with the reductions, the current plans offered by the city are still relatively generous in comparison to the rest of the world. I would reckon if you went out on the street and laid out the provisions of the current city policies, you'd find very few people who wouldn't say, sign me up for that today. So, yes, I understand.
What does it offer now? What is that policy?
Again, there are so many classifications of employees, it's tough to say. But in general, the changes the council made in the last few years required incoming employees to work more years, ultimately for reduced benefits, as opposed to a few years ago where most retirees were largely getting health insurance that was all but free. I mean, you were literally talking maybe no more than a couple hundred dollars a year in most cases. They're now paying substantially more for that. I understand how aggravated I would be if that applied to me. But as I say, the courts have given the city clearance to make those changes. But even with expecting more payments out of the employee while on the payroll and later as a retiree, it is still a plan that stacks up very well with the rest of the world.
And I think that one of the things the city has to continue to do is lower the assumptions. I think our assumptions still are too high. They don't face the reality of what the stock market will ultimately return. So bringing those numbers down clearly brings up the liability for the city, but it also brings the plan into reality so everybody can really see it.
When you say assumptions, do you mean how much money they're expecting in return?
Yeah, so 7.5% to me is still too aggressive, and I think that number needs to come in line around 6%, which would ultimately mean the city would need to put more of its payroll into their system. And one of the reasons they don't do that is the city doesn't want to show it. It increases ultimately the liability. But let me also say that the Anthem demutualized, and this was something that really bothered me. And the city received around $56 million. And I believed very strongly that the city should have shared in that windfall of money into the system, and they didn't do it. And I think those are the kinds of decisions that undermine the confidence of the worker and the retiree and the taxpayer. When the city says, we're going to move forward on a streetcar, we're going to build these elaborate toilets downtown, and I'm sitting here saying the crisis right now facing our city is this pension. And all of these things are connected. They're not disconnected. And many times members of council attempt to disconnect them, Marianne.
However, the streetcar money, some of that money certainly is designed only to be used for a streetcar and could not be put into the pension fund. Is that not correct?
That is true and untrue. We're issuing $64 million of new debt to build the streetcar. So possibly one of the ways to solve this problem is to issue pension obligation bonds. So we're $400 million in debt. So as we go more in debt, it lowers the probability of us being able to go out and raise debt to solve the problems that we need to solve. So I'm sharing with you, Marianne, this is the priority, not the streetcar. And yes, there is a direct connection between our ability to go into indebtedness and our ability to solve this problem.
And as Christopher pointed out, to a large extent, when you look at the long-term picture, it's a numbers game based on estimates and projections. Right now, there are many who would argue the projected $1 billion hole is actually deeper, because if you factor into that number an expectation you're going to earn 7.5% or 8% annually in terms of return, you are compressing that number from what maybe is more realistic. So whether the hole is a billion or deeper is in the matter of the a matter of being in the eye of the beholder right now.
This is Impact Cincinnati on 91.7 WVXU. We're going to continue our discussion about the Cincinnati retirement system in just a moment.
Support comes from UMR, a United Healthcare company offering self-funded employers an opportunity to control healthcare costs with plans tailored to their workforces. UMR assisting over 1,000 businesses and over 2 million plan members endeavoring to live financially and physically healthier lives. Details at umr.com.
Support comes from UC's College Conservatory of Music. Artistic and culinary delights fill the air at A Movable Feast, presented by the Friends of CCM on Friday, January 18th. The annual benefit event showcases CCM students, faculty, and alumni in an evening of live performances and by-the-bite cuisine. Information at 556-2100 or ccm.uc.edu.
This is Impact Cincinnati on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Marianne Zalesnik. We're talking this morning about the Cincinnati retirement system and my guests, Cincinnati Councilman Christopher Smitherman and Cincinnati Inquirer reporter Barry Horseman. We'd love to hear from you, too. You can send your questions to impact@wvxu.org, or better yet, put them on our Facebook page. This question comes from Michael, who says, if Cincinnati's population would have stabilized rather than declined over the past few decades, would that have been enough to keep the retirement system afloat, or would the retirement system have been in trouble anyway?
The retirement system would have been in trouble anyway, because one of the main drivers is what's happened in the stock market. So those losses, good decisions, bad decisions, that's a major reason we're where we are now.
And also what you saw happening a lot over the years, again, I mentioned earlier the 80s and 90s in city council, if there was not the money available for an immediate sizable pay increase for employee groups, council at that time found it very convenient to say, we can't give you the money now, but we'll sweeten your retirement pot. That's proverbially referred to as kicking the can down the road. Those people knew the decisions they were putting into place would be felt long after they were gone from City Hall. We are now seeing the consequences of what was promised to employees 20 years ago.
This question's from Bev. She wants to know, is it true that the ultimate control of the system is in the hands of City Council? And if yes, does this make sense since Council has other pressures which interfere with making objective financial decisions for the retirement system? And is there a conflict of interest?
Wow. it's a good question, and I don't have an answer to that. I think that as I've raised earlier in your show, Marianne, that the streetcar and whatever projects we're putting forth do have a relationship on our ability to meet these other obligations. For whether we're spending $100,000 on a toilet or whether we're spending $150 million on the first leg of a streetcar. I think it's a very interesting question, but at the end of the day, the citizens elect 9 people of council to be the board of trustees for the city, and that then also requires us to have direct supervision of the retirement system.
And the council is the ultimate authority. I'm not sure that it makes any sense to break off the retirement system from council control, because the retirement system is one of literally hundreds of financial obligations the city has. It makes sense from my perspective to have the council weigh how what we put into the pension system affects the rest of what the city offers to its entire citizenry. So I'm not sure that if you gave complete authority to an outside agency that would simply come to the council and say, you've got to come up with $50 million. That does not strike me as a realistic scenario.
Marianne, I'd like to spend at least a minute giving some solutions. I think one of the solutions is we should break the pot of money up, the $1.9 or $2 billion that we have, and have 3 different advisors managing that money, competing every year on returns. That's incredibly important. We're paying $12 million a year. And in some years, they lost $200 or $300 million, and we still highly compensated those advisors. So creating competition, I think, is important. Number two, the city...
Are the advisors city employees or are they firms?
No, they are firms.
Okay.
They are firms. Mm-hmm. And the second thing I think is important is the city has to make a commitment to go out and issue some debt to infuse some cash into the pension. Now, we could argue whether it's $500 or $600 or $200 million, but I don't think it's zero. And while interest rates are very low, I think that this is the time to make that decision. Now, in doing this, Marianne, I don't believe we should take the pension dollars, meaning we issue pension obligation bonds, and infuse it with the same advisors who've been losing money. I think we separate that money out so that we can look at the return that we're getting on the bonds, because we're paying the interest on the bonds that we've issued. At the same time, we're absolutely monitoring the returns inside of that pension. So we just don't infuse it into the same pot, so we have a good visibility on how that money is working, because there are some municipalities who went out and issued pension obligation bonds, and the scenario did not work out well because they got worse returns inside of the pension.
Christopher's talked about some of the options out there and what do we do about the situation in which we find ourselves. The way we get out is simple. The mechanics of that are anything but simple. You either get higher returns annually, you put in a huge cash infusion to buy down some of that current billion-dollar hole that we're in right now, or you cut the current benefits that you're paying in future. As I say, those are the basic options, and how you put together some kind of an approach that probably combines each of those, I think, is where the city is going to be over the next year or two.
Now, I have to say one thing, because I know there are going to be people yelling if I don't at least mention. You talk about the amount of money that was lost in the fund and perhaps your lack of confidence in those investors that are doing that. However, everybody lost money in 2008. I don't know that there were many people that maybe, I couldn't tell you exactly what Warren Buffett did, but we probably should point out that that was probably not the only fund that lost a whole lot of money.
That is true, but what has frustrated me is the number of years, the multiple years of those losses. And there seems to be, in my opinion, not a clear plan of what they're going to do different. Remember, our money, Marianne, is invested very passively, meaning the money is invested in mutual funds at the end of the day. We certainly could make the decision as a member of council to have the money invested in individual securities and have it more actively managed. Part of my concern is that we're real passive in that process.
And just to help people out there get a grasp on this, I've always found it instructive to think of our retirement system almost like parents of a newborn who decide we need to start putting away $5,000 a year for the next 18 years to be ready for when our child goes off to college. Mm-hmm. Now, if you don't do that in the first year or the second or third or fourth, nobody's going to come knocking at your door and say, where's the $5,000? But if you wait to get started on that process, each further year down the road becomes much more burdensome, not only because there's less time to save, but you've lost the return on investment in those years. That is largely the situation in which the city of Cincinnati finds itself right now. This is not a bill that has to be paid tomorrow, 5 years from now, or to an extent, even 10 years from now, but it's the boulder rolling down the hill at us.
This question comes from Mark, and it's an extremely long question. I can't get into all of it. Basically, he starts out talking about city retirees working for years accepting lower pay in exchange for good benefits and good retirement benefits, and that there were some problems that you've all gone into with the retirement system over those years. He talks about the retirees not getting Social Security benefits. Is that true? They do not receive any.
They don't pay into it, right.
That's right.
So since they don't pay in, they don't get anything out. So then his final question is, so how is this employment agreement, the sacrosanct promise, different than the promise the city makes to bondholders or to anyone it borrows from? The city took our work and promised a clearly described retirement package. Are they now claiming it was caveat emptor?
I think Mark's question points to the heart of what Barry and I have talked about, is the morality of making changes to current retirees' benefits and the breaking the workers and the retirees up into classes. I agree with that, the commentary of the question. On February 20th at 6 o'clock, there'll be a hearing in City Hall. And I encourage the workers, I encourage Mark, who just asked that question, to be there. And oftentimes, it's going to be a long hearing. It's going to be 2 to 3 hours. So they have to be very patient and sit through the entire presentation. But they should be present for that.
We should say that's the hearing that the director of the fund, Paula Tilsley, was talking about why she is not here today because she didn't feel she should present here before that meeting.
That is correct.
Takes place.
I just wanted to point out there was a slight flaw in the premise of the question. We hear this all the time. Public employees say we earn less money now, and part of the trade-off is we get enhanced retirement benefits. Most credible studies I've shown have said that public salaries, again, compare very well to what you find in the private sector for comparable positions. So that argument, I think, has been misused over time. And just to straighten out the argument, I think it's important to clear that up.
Was that true years ago as well, not just now? I know now that they say the salaries are comparable. Was that true 20 years ago?
I've seen data going back as far as the 1990s that suggest it was, yes. It could have been in the distant past. There might have been the gap between if you were a clerk at a city hall versus a law office, you know, what you earned. But that argument has been not very valid for a long time.
And I'd like to also note that fire and police do not pay into the retirement system that we're discussing. But yet again, this discussion impacts them. And many times we'll get questions from fire and police that will say, hey, you know, does this impact me or doesn't it? But it doesn't. It doesn't impact their retirement, but it impacts their job because, as Barry has noted, as we put more money in the system, it means that we also have to deal with what services we're going to cut in order to make that happen.
This question's from Kyle, and you sort of answered it earlier, but perhaps he didn't hear that part. I thought the capital budget and the pension budget was different. How does that have a relation to a streetcar? Isn't it different pots of money?
It's not, because when you issue $64 million of debt, number one, you have to pay the debt back over some time period, and you're using multiple sources to do that. Number two, in order for us to go out and issue pension obligation bonds, which is important, we have $400 million of debt now. If we were to issue $500 million, it would take us to $900 million of debt. So the bond rating agencies, which soon will really hone in on this pension issue that the city is facing and begin to lower our bond rating. So as we sell more debt to build more legs of the streetcar, it also impacts our ability to solve this problem, because ultimately we're going to have to come up with new cash or sell assets in order to solve this problem.
But what you're saying is the impact is based more because of the debt, not that the specific money that's being used for
that
the
is correct.
Streetcar could be put into the that retirement.
Is, absolutely.
Fund.
That is correct. But I'm saying that many times the streetcar supporters try to de-link these conversations, and they are not de-linked. We have a capital budget, we have an operating budget, and there are priorities within both of those budgets.
Also, you could argue that the $64 million in bonds that the city is issuing for the streetcar represented one of those either-or decisions I alluded to earlier. The city could have just as clearly decided, instead of spending $64 million on that, let's put $64 million into the pension fund or anything else.
We are just about out of time. Tell us again when this hearing is.
It's February the 20th at 6 o'clock. It's a special hearing of council that council member Charlie Winburn, two members of council can call. There's no public input. The council has organized themselves. I don't agree with that, but there's no public input, but it's important that they be there and take an active part in that
so
meeting.
So there'll basically just be a presentation that they can hear.
And then direct questions from members of council.
They are allowed to direct questions to council?
No. We, as council members,
can
ask questions. That is correct.
And Paula Tilsley is reporting in the hearing as anyone else? Or is she the main person?
The investment advisor should be there, and also the actuaries should be there, and also the city manager should be present for that hearing.
Thank you both for being here. Time goes quickly. This is a complicated subject.
Thank you. Thank you for the time.
And thank you for listening to Impact Cincinnati on 91.7 WVXU. My guests today were Cincinnati Councilman Christopher Smitherman and Cincinnati Inquirer reporter Barry Horseman. Archives of our programs are available on our website, wvxu.org. Producer for today's program was Pete Reitmeier.